I'm Mike Lubick of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and we are the Sports Reporters. Welcome to another edition of the Sports Reporters podcast, heard every Friday and Monday, and a lot to get to today. Later on, the NFL, the hit that heard around the world in the Thursday night game. What's going to happen in the protests coming up this weekend, or will there be them? Dwayne Wade rejoins LeBron, takes his talents to Cleveland, and we'll see how that's going to affect the NBA. And, of course, the playoffs are about to begin in baseball. But you cannot ignore this, the scandal that has now rocked college basketball and makes you wonder what the future of college basketball as an entity really is. Assistant coaches from Arizona, Auburn, Louisville, Miami, Oklahoma State, and USC all implicated in an FBI investigation. Rick Pitino out at Louisville along with his athletic director. And Mike and Bob, I mean, we have long known, covering sports for a long time, that college basketball has got a lot of sleazy elements and a lot of sleazy characters. But is this a knockout blow?
Well, Bob and Mitch, our friend Paul Westphal sent me a text after the Rick Pitino thing, and he said, how can anybody not look at this as the end of NCAA college basketball as we have known it? Because when the feds have to come in and clean up a sport that the NCAA cannot, it starts to look like boxing in the 1950s. And, you know, we'll get to Pitino, and I make no presumption of what he knew and what he didn't know. But one of the greatest coaches in history lost his job because of this. And what they did this week out of the Southern District of the city of New York, and Mitch, you've heard me say this before, when the Southern District comes for you, you're screwed, okay? What they did was take the shadow government and the shadow mob that the sneaker companies have so often been in college basketball out of the shadows and brought it out into the light.
We've upped the ante here considerably. In the old days, which means up to this week, the scary word was suspended. And now we have new words to worry about in this discussion, such as arrested, indicted, convicted, and the big one, incarcerated. We have changed the dialogue forever. There's no question. And I just have to go out front here. I've loved college sports since I was 6 years old. I love it. I've been an enabler. I declared long ago that anyone who likes college sports is like someone. It's like being in love with a hooker. You have to know that it's a sleazy, you know, that it's bad for you. She's bad, but you can't help it. There's something enduring charm that lures you in with this person. And you know, we all know that once they throw the ball up or kick it off, we don't worry about who these kids are, how they got there, and anything else. We just enjoy the competition. But you talk about the sausage factory analogy, but we've just changed the ante here completely. The NCAA is now out of it, and the feds are in. And as Mike said, the feds are in, you're in trouble.
Right. And let's identify the culprits in this thing. It goes back a long, long time ago, schools providing favors to try to get players to come to their school. It might be a ride. It might be a birthday cake. It might be a bottle of alcohol. It might be whatever. You can't put a date on when that started happening to try to get players to come. But what you can put a date on is when the shoe companies got involved. In 1977, Sonny Vaccaro signs Jerry Tarkanian and a couple other coaches to contracts with Nike. And for a fee, which is probably so small now, you would laugh at it, the coaches got sent shoes. Now, we remember if you played high school sports or whatever, you know, they gave you your equipment, you know, like, you know, they gave you your uniform, you had to buy your own shoes or whatever. Right then and there, when colleges decided, and that was the first step, and then not long after that, in 1987, so it's 10 years later, Nike signed its first all-school deal with Miami. Like, the whole school was going to wear, all the sports teams were going to wear shoes. Once that got involved, you got a third party here. Now, it wasn't colleges and maybe some rich alumni, you know, giving a favor to a kid to come to a school. Now it was multi ultimately billion-dollar shoe companies with all their money trying to make sure that college basketball players got steered into programs, high school kids got steered into programs where they would wear Adidas or Nike at that school, and therefore, when they became pros, sign a contract with them to continue to wear. And that is, you start to identify the culprits on the board. It began there because even as much money as ended up in college basketball, there's more of it in shoes. And you got this third shadowy party, and I'm not surprised that it's an Adidas executive who's sort of at the core of all this stuff.
And Mitch, there are so many ironies to this, okay? Because believe me, as complicit as the shoe companies are in this, so are the coaches, so are these financial advisors, so are the agents, and so are these, quote, street agents who get their hooks into these kids from AAU basketball on. So when I say irony, how did Rick Pitino become as famous as he did? And I know he took Providence to the Final Four. How did he get the Kentucky job? Well, he got the Kentucky job because of a scandal that included an assistant coach sending, this seems like tipping money now, $1,000
right,
to a recruit, okay?
Emory Air Freight, by the way, just for a bit of historical detail.
And the envelope fell open, right? Isn't that what happened?
Yeah.
The envelope accidentally fell open, the money fell out?
Yeah.
And Mitch, it nearly ended the coaching career of a guy who has completely rehabilitated his name and his brand and his reputation, and that is Dwayne Casey, okay? But what I'm saying is that's how Rick Pitino became one of the – and they all jokingly call him the godfather. Well, that has other implications now. One of the godfathers of college basketball. And, you know, I take no pleasure in this. We have both known Rick an incredibly long time. We've had our ups and downs, but I like Rick. So I take no pleasure in what has happened to us. But to me, the bigger story here is that college basketball has been revealed to be the seamy business that he is. And, you know, Mitch and Bob, I heard this story this week, that the NCAA was actually cooperating with the feds on this thing. Because if they were, guess what? That means that all of this high road, moral integrity, and leadership of the sport, an organization, by the way, that punishes kids for trading memorabilia for tattoos, you know, at Ohio State, has completely lost control of the operation.
You know, one of the thoughts that swung to mind for me, amusing thought, was we're talking here about serious life issues. We're talking about incarceration. And yet, in the NCAA, the rule book, which is so impossibly thick because no one trusts anybody. That's the reason the rules have existed in the NBA, because no one trusts anybody at all. And they have a thing, they've created a wonderful phrase, guys. You know, you love this one. We both know, we all know it. Impermissible benefits. And among the impermissible benefits are such things as giving the kid a ride, you know, from the practice site back where he goes when it's raining.
Or a hamburger.
And the greatest one of all, and Mitch and John, I mean, and Mike, and I think you were there with the day that he told us this one. Our great late friend John Saunders told us about, and I found out that this is the gospel truth, that it's so nitpicky that you can give a kid the bagel, but if you give him the cream cheese, it's an impermissible benefit.
I did a story with Rick Pitino years ago for, I think it was GQ or something, and I had to go do, you know, when you did those magazine stories, you would spend 3-4 days, you know, with the guy. And we went to recruiting. I remember he had to get out of a car. We had to go, because I was with him, I had to go in a separate car behind another car as they were going out on a recruiting thing, because you weren't allowed to, you know, be in a reporter in the same car. And you think about that, or the hamburger or the ride. And this, the FBI, and there are several questions that I want to ask you guys. One, who is actually running this sport now? Who are they answering to, I should say? Because the NCAA looks like the Keystone Cops compared to the FBI trying to enforce it. The NCAA cannot enforce this kind of thing, okay? They're not set up out of wherever they are in Kansas or whatever to start chasing down, wiretapping people and forming phony corporations. I mean, when you read the details of this thing, this is a major, major sting operation that went on for years, where they established phony companies and false checks and things like that to try to entrap people or get them to admit what they were doing, wearing wires, filming little cameras around. NCAA is not going to do that. So clearly, even if the FBI is just getting into the water here, who's now running this sport? That's question number one. And question number two, did Can any head coach not know that this stuff is going on under his nose?
Well, Mitch, listen. I was talking to Bob Costas about this the other day, and we are supposed to believe that the biggest control freaks that we know about in sports, maybe outside of NFL coaches, are great control freaks, except when bad stuff is happening in their own program. And again, you know, Rick, his career survived a terrible episode with a woman who later tried to shake him down. His career survived the stripper parties at that were going on in plain sight at Louisville. But Mitch, you can only stand there and point a finger over on the other side of the court and say, they did it, and I didn't know so many times. And that's what finally caught up with him. And guess what, Mitch and Bob? You know what this comes back to? Everybody's getting rich in college sports except the people who put the fans in the stadiums and in the arenas and make all these coaches and all these schools rich, and that's the players. And you guys have heard me say this for years. The only athletes who reap less benefits for what they do than college athletes are thoroughbred racehorses.
Well, I'm just, you know, I knew we've already entered into this. People have entered it. To me, this is a side issue. I'm sorry. But there'll be plenty of time in a long winter to have this discussion, or a long fall of the college football season, to have this discussion about paying the players. Because I think that is a side issue. That's me. I'm a holdout. I'm stubborn. I'm going old school. I think that this thing can work to the benefit of the alleged quote unquote student athlete. It does. It's working at this very moment in places that we're not talking about. But I don't think that's the issue here. I think that's a subplot. I think the real issue is what's sticking to the procedure of the obtaining of these players and what we're really talking about here. That's me. So,
and do you think that Pitino knew what was going on, or had to know what was going on?
Oh, God, yes. John Feinstein, who knows a hell of a lot about college sports, and college basketball in particular, he wrote a piece in the Washington Post yesterday and just making it quite crystal clear, as Tom Cruise said in A Few Good Men, that they know everything. Pitino once said, he quoted Pitino as saying at one point along the way, if a kid has a beer, I hear about it. And that's pre-stripper party quote. But, you know, come on. Of course he has to know. And they know. And it's I'm sorry. And if they don't know, it's only because they don't want to know.
Well, last month, Tom Jurek, who now has gotten fired, the athletic director for Louisville, before all this came out, his duty was to announce a 10-year, $160 million sponsorship deal with Adidas. And they're not getting that for their football team, you know. So you figure out that's $16 million right off the top that's coming into your school for shoes. And so, Mike, when you talk about, you know, all the money goes everywhere except for the kids, that's true. Yeah. And where does it come from? It comes from shoes and it comes from television.
Right.
Comes from shoes and it comes from television. It doesn't come from ticket sales. You know, I mean, the college basketball arenas in many cases are still relatively small, and you know, you're giving out tickets to the students. It comes from TV and it comes from shoes. Bob, if you want the sport that you love, which I love too, and it is being played, you know, at every day at a Division III school or a Division school, just take the television away and take the shoes away and say, okay, we're just going to exist in what we bring in by people coming in to pay for tickets, and that'll be our sports program. But good luck. You know,
oh, yeah.
Good luck trying that. It's never going to happen.
That train left the station, as we know it. And one of the things I was thinking, as you're talking about the size of arenas and stuff, Louisville, in fact, does play in the Young's Arena, Y-U-M Center, or whatever it is. I've been there. It's a spectacular, more than once, it's a spectacular place. There's such a gradation in college sports. And the NCAA, there are 340-some odd schools in Division I basketball officially. We all know there's about five gradations of those schools. And the reality of Louisville basketball and Kentucky basketball and Kansas basketball and Duke and Carolina basketball, as opposed to McNeese State and Idaho and Coppin State and Boston University, they're universes apart. What's going on up the top is a major business enterprise involving, as you say, all this big money. And what's going on at the bottom is that mom and pop store, essentially the same as it was 50 years ago.
Well, the one thing they've never had to put a button on this. They've never had in these scandals, which obviously we've heard millions of them till now, they've always involved the NCAA. One thing they've never had is the threat of incarceration when they say, you know, or talk. Because this whole thing came out because they made a deal with, I mean, it's fascinating. It goes back to a guy who was advising clients and was taking their money kind of like Bernie Madoff in a Ponzi scheme to make films, Hollywood films that bombed. And then he ended up taking some money from athletes. The SEC comes after him. He makes a plea deal and he promises to, you know, get involved with turning on people. Next thing you know, people are wearing wires. And next thing you know, people are saying, if you don't want to go to jail, you're going to wear a wire too. Well, a lot of these people, these assistant coaches who have been collected already and are now facing serious jail time. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I had no idea you could go to jail for this long for this kind of stuff. They're not going to just sit quietly and go, okay, well, I'll take the hit for my head coach. So chances are we're going to get a whole lot more on this.
Mitch, guess what? You know who's really happy? All the television partners, because in 6 months, when it's time to go dancing again in college basketball, they hope that this will be in their rearview mirror. Hmm.
Let's shift to the NFL because there's a lot going on in professional football. But right off the bat, Thursday night's game between Green Bay and Chicago, which was interesting for a lot of reasons, but it shouldn't be, unfortunately, for this one. If you haven't seen this hit, go look at it on YouTube. It's awful. Danny Trevathan of the Bears comes flying in on Davante Adams, who is probably being wrapped up by a half a dozen players at that point, by half a dozen. He's not going anywhere. And Trevathan comes flying in, hits him square on, helmet to helmet. In one of those slow motion things that can only happen with today's cameras, his mouthpiece, Davante Adams' mouthpiece, comes flying out. It looks like something out of Raging Bull. And he's on the ground for a long, long time. And supposedly he's okay, but you know, there's no way that doesn't do damage. And it's a 15-yard penalty. And Trevathan gets to continue to play in the game. How is that possible?
Okay. All right. Here's Trevathan's explanation, by the way. And you hear this all the time. I was just trying to make a play. It wasn't intentional. I was just trying to hustle to the ball and do my job. Well, shut up. Shut up. The player was stopped. There was no forward momentum going on, and he hits him helmet to helmet. And even Mike Pereira said he hadn't seen a hit quite like it, a crown of the helmet hit like that in years. And, you know, I know that we are obsessed right now with the anthem and locked arms and players kneeling in protest. But guess what? The main event is still Davante Adams' head, okay? And the main event is not supposed to be hoping to see a player, as Davante Adams did, as he's being carried off, hold up his arms. So you know that he has movement now in his arms and legs. And guess what? Not only should Trevathan be suspended for that hit, he should have been tossed from the stupid game last night.
You know, what we're talking about here, we're talking about mentality. They're talking. The NFL has got put it trying, you know, publicly anyway, to clean up the game, if you will, to soften the game, to humanize the game, to take the barbaric aspects out of the game, and protect. And talking about safety, of course, we all know you cannot make NFL football or any football safe, quote unquote. You can make it safer, but you can't make it ultimately safe. Okay, fine. What are we talking about? We're talking about mentality. How many years are we into this crusade now? And yet you still have guys such as Trevathan and countless others who are still somehow or other bred from high school, often by these maniacal coaches, and taught that this is okay. And it's just, there's a mentality that is endemic with the sport. When is it ever going to end? I don't think it can ever end.
Well, they at least have a device in the NFL called a flagrant foul, which they could have used. You know, they tend to use it more when players fight. But they can use it for this, and they could have thrown him out of the game. And at least, as Mike points out, that would have been a step in acknowledging you can't do that. The fact that this guy continued to play and it was a 15-yard penalty, and who knows what ramifications are going to be in Adams's head down the road. Forget about this week or next week or if he comes back. You know, in the 10-15-year thing on CTE, where does that rank in the long-term damage that it does? So at the very least, NFL, use the rules that you got. And the referee should be reprimanded, as far as I'm concerned. If the league, like you say, Bob, is really serious, reprimand him.
Mitch, not just reprimanded, he ought to be suspended. Now, this was John Hussey, the referee's explanation of why he didn't toss him. From my perspective, I just didn't see enough to have it rise to that level. That issue, what I would have to say, is a judgment call. Yeah, John, that's why you're out there and they gave you a whistle. Okay, was it egregious? Was it completely unnecessary? Let me answer that for you, John. Yeah, it was. Mitch, listen to this. I didn't have enough information from my perspective to make it that. Well, okay, John, that means you were watching the wrong movie. So when Trevathan gets suspended, you get suspended right along with him. And of course, all of the players rallied, or the Bears players especially, rallied around Danny Trevathan, Akeem Hicks, who's a defensive player on the team, said he was just trying to make a football play. Yeah. And guess what, Bobby? That's the problem.
Well, of course it is, and they can't figure out the boundary lines. They can't. Between the old fashioned mentality of knock the snot out of them, you know. And I've had this discussion with people about. Tackling, you know, in general, the fact that tackling is a lost art, that most of the DBs use the shoulder roll thing. They're launching themselves. They're not going into tackle. And the explanation I got back is, well, they're trying to get the ball loose. So there's a better chance of getting the ball loose instead of and not just bringing a guy down if they launch themselves rather than actually tackling. If we went back to tackling and we really instilled in people from the beginning of the football life that they have that tackling is what you do and not trying to, quote, knock the snot out of somebody, I mean, we'd be getting somewhere, but we're not anywhere close to that.
Well, launching should be for rockets. You know, tackling should be for football. Now, earlier in the game, this was interesting to me, and so was the reaction. I'm curious what you guys thought. The Packers knew that they're playing at home on Thursday night. So they were the first team that sort of had to do something or announce something with regards to what protests or things like that would be ahead of the game, you know, and other Sunday teams could sort of watch what happened. They came out and said, let's have everybody in the stadium lock arms together in a show of unity. And I'm sure Aaron Rodgers thought, hey, this is going to be great. You know, we're going to reach out. We're going to have I'd like to teach the world to sing moment from the Coca-Cola commercials. And except it wasn't received that way. In a town that always loves its team, there was suddenly a lot of division. And there was a lot of fans who said, we're not in your protest here now. Don't tell us how to now observe the national anthem. It's all, you know, it's all right. We're accepting what you're doing or we're understanding it or whatever. Really, you want us to do it? And in the end, very few did. I mean, there were some who did, but there were also people who were chanting USA, USA before the thing all happened. What do you think about that idea in general? Was that a smart move from the Packers, the way to approach it? And what's going to happen this weekend now if Donald Trump doesn't tweet out something, you know, Friday, Saturday night that sends everybody into a tizzy again? What's going to happen?
First of all, I thought that it was a completely honorable and kind of idealistic but cool idea from Aaron Rodgers. And guess what? These players, even the ones who have been protesting, Mitch, they even though they know they're not being unpatriotic, it's a tough thing to be called unpatriotic by the president of the United States, even one who so clearly, Gary Myers pointed this out in the Daily News today, so clearly has had an agenda against the NFL since he sued them and they basically put his USFL out of business, okay? And he didn't get the Buffalo Bills. So this is a guy who never, forgets any sort of slight. You know, in Donald Trump's world, no turn goes unstoned. Okay. And so now he's got them and there's enough people who are going to be the chanters and they're going to chant USA. And the other day, Trump was saying that, I've been to Walter Reed. Well, this isn't about the soldiers at Walter Reed. It was never about the soldiers at Walter Reed. But no American or African American or anybody in this country wants to be called unpatriotic. So to me, the locked arm thing, I don't know what you think about this, Bob. I actually think is kind of a cool compromise to say, you know what, we're not sons of bitches, okay? That, and we don't think the players who have knelt are sons of bitches. But we're united in basically in the idea that we could be a better country. So in that way, I thought it was cool.
I don't know. I have no problem with trying it or doing it. I'm just, you know, but you're, what's so frustrating to me is the fact that I think we would have been beyond, almost out of this. It would have been dying down and dying its a slow death if the POTUS had not inflamed everybody with that comment in Alabama and stoked the flames. And there's no question it got turned into something it wasn't. He can say all he wants had nothing to do with race, but when you couple it with praising NASCAR with its 98%+ participation yeah. and fandom and participation of Caucasians, then come on. And so, I mean, he's given it legs, big time. Bigly giving it legs, and I don't know when it's not going to end. Mike, you're so right. We never had anything to do with the soldiers. It never had anything to do with that at
no.
all. So it's been hijacked now into something else, and it's just
well, but
endless.
part of the problem is what does it have to do with? And I think that this is why you had the reaction you did in Green Bay, which let's remember, Wisconsin voted for Trump. So, you know, in the 2016 election. So if this is about Donald Trump, and I think that last week's protests were exactly about Donald Trump, and they weren't about the military, and I'm not even sure they were about race or police brutality. They were about, hold on, a president can't come out and call us sons of bitches and say our sport is this or that, and we're uniting. We, the football players and owners, are uniting against a president attacking us. Okay, that explains why the players want to do it. I don't know that that's a good enough reason for every fan who comes out and pays money to go watch a football game. They're not coming to a political rally, and they're not wrong in this. You know, not this is just this. You can feel it's wrong, or you can believe it's wrong, or whatever. But this is how Americans feel. They don't want every minute of their lives politicized, and probably are already sick of feeling like it is because you can't turn on a television and not see anything, no matter what comes out, have a left or a right to it. And so you get the reaction that you did in Green Bay of fans saying, we'll pass. You guys do what you're going to do, but don't tell us, again, a state that voted for Trump, that we have to lock arms in your protest against whatever it is that you're protesting, which I'm all for unity in the country. But if we're all being, you know, if we're not just trying to sound good and sound like we're on the right side of history, what is the protest about exactly? Some people... they're still talking about police brutality. That's where it began, okay, all the way back with Colin Kaepernick, Ferguson, those kinds of events. Others are just talking about a racist president or white supremacy. Others are just talking about a president who called people sons of bitches, and you can't do that. All right, that's three different things right there. And so what you said, Bobby, is correct about, you know, well, you know, they're making a point about – I'm not sure the American public understands anymore – or even some of the players, what exactly they are kneeling or holding hands against. And then things get diffused and they get confused.
Yeah, the whole idea of the anthem being used at all, that issue is, and number one. But somehow, where did the flag, you know, go back to the guy, Colin Kaepernick, you know, where did the flag come into this? It had nothing to do with the flag. You know, it had nothing to do with the flag, you know, at all. Now that's, it's just, as I said, can anyone doubt that we would be in recession with this? It would be, the waters would be receding, the life would be getting back to normal if Donald Trump hadn't.
The numbers are clear. It was six people the weekend before, and hundreds the weekend after he said it.
And by the way, there's one other false narrative here, okay? And again, there are enough people. There's a rabid base of Trump supporters who would believe this president if he told them water wasn't wet, okay? They just would. But the idea that this is why ratings are down in the NFL is a bunch of bullshit. I'm sorry. As somebody pointed out today, there were a whole bunch of returning big network TV shows this week whose ratings were down 10 to 50%. I think Dan Le Batard raised the idea. Was that Colin Kaepernick's fault too?
Well, that I can tell you the American public could give a rat's rear end about, you know, whether NFL ratings are down or not. But I'll tell you who does think about it is the owners. And that's not a surprise that, you know, there was that meeting with Goodell and owners and representatives and all that. I don't know what went on. There was nothing announced about it. But they will continue to watch. But I don't know, Bob, when you said, well, so yeah, it's definitely going to continue. Is it like what's going to happen Sunday? Is there going to be 50% of the amount of protests? Is every team still going? Are they going to do this the following? So let's say that Trump moves on to other things. So he's not.
He won't, Mitch. Mitch, he will not. He will not move on because he will have to find a way to declare victory in this the way he always is obsessed with declaring victory in all things.
So you think he's going to tweet every Friday and Saturday just like the players play a game every Sunday?
Yeah,
it's not inconceivable. How can anyone think it's inconceivable with him? And you know, and I don't think it's gonna it's over. I think we're going to be living with this for the rest of the season.
You bet.
Well,
you bet.
The NBA, interestingly, and Adam Silver, you know, now it's like who's up next? You know,
yeah,
and these sports have always these. I think no one's been happier than hockey and basketball that they haven't started yet, and maybe they can. You know, they were hoping that this would go away before their national anthem started getting played, but. Basketball is here. Adam Silver has come out and said he expects teams to stand for the anthem. And by the way, a basketball team, it's going to be a lot more noticeable, you know, when you do it. You're, you know, a football team on the sidelines. Really, did any of us before this ever pay attention to who might be sitting or who might be off to the side or who might be doing one in a football game, an NFL football game? You can barely make out who's who on an NFL sideline. But you can clearly see, especially if players are center court, you know, or they have the starters come out and then they stand. If a guy suddenly goes down on his knee center court in the NBA, it's going to get a lot of attention, particularly in a league where they're not wearing helmets. You know, you can see the guys' faces. Do you think the NBA is going to hold to that stance and enforce it, Bobby? I mean, you know this. You know that.
Oh, I that's going to be very interesting because you know, we're talking about a league that there's even a higher percentage of black players in the NBA than there is in the NFL. And it's there's a lot of strident people and intelligent people. I don't know how this is going to play out. You know, this is where it all began, you know, way back when with Abdul Rauf. And
and they ran him out of the league.
And that was then. But they did. Let's not forget that. No, it's. I think they should be very edgy at the higher hierarchy.
And by the way, I know this. It sounds crazy because we have to deal with all of these issues because that's why we're the sports reporters. Can I point to one fascinating football game that will be played this Sunday, and that is the New England Patriots against the Carolina Panthers, okay? Because it just strikes me as being so interesting that about 15 minutes ago, Cam Newton was poised to win the Super Bowl and be the next thing at quarterback in the NFL. And guess who he's going up against on Sunday, Bob? He's going up against a guy who at 40 refuses to stop being the next thing, and that's Brady.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, the Patriot games are going to be interesting until further notice, until and unless they find a defense. Their defense has been woeful, and Brady bailed them out, and the offense bailed them out, last week. But the defense has been terrible, and every way they can't stop the run. They give up the enormous big chunk plays, as they call them now. And Newton is a kind of a mobile quarterback who has traditionally given them trouble. And they had trouble corralling Watson. Watson had him beat, you know, pretty much last week. And Newton's, you know, the original Watson. He's bigger and stronger it's going to be an interesting matchup. But the Patriots are a very questionable commodity right now.
Well, and I agree with what you said, Mike, about Cam Newton. He's a mystery. And I don't know if he ever quite has gotten over the beating that he physically took and his reputation and everything he took
too,
in the Super
yeah.
Bowl.
Yep.
I mean, you know, there are games and there are games in guys' careers. And you know, we all know we've covered sports collectively for, you know, well over 100 years. Sometimes you never get past one game, depending on the stage that it was on. And, you know, remember that roll that they were on going in? What were they, 15-1 that year, I think?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
15-1. And it was like, this guy's the second coming, and he's gonna just dominate the game and launch into, you know, everyone's going to be doing the dab and the whole country's and it didn't happen. I mean, not only didn't it happen, the biggest memory of him is down on the ground in the Super Bowl time and time again. And, you know, he's had more than a year, obviously, to recover from that. And there's been fits and starts of him looking like his old self or his young self, but not all the way back. And I wonder if just that inconsistency still hangs in there somewhere. I don't know how. Mm. But.
And Mitch, I was sitting in a dressing room with the legendary sports philosopher Mike Tyson before a fight with Terrell Biggs once. And I was one of the people in the room that heard this. It may have been the first time he said it. It's one of the greatest lines I've ever heard about sports. And it is there were some British writers who had been over with Biggs, and they came over and they said, you know, Mike, the Biggs people have a pretty good plan for you on Saturday night. And Tyson looked at him. He said, everybody's got a plan until they get hit. And you're absolutely right. There are hits, and then there are hits. And not only did he get hit in the game, but remember, Mitch, he got hit for the way he behaved after the game. Mm. And it will be interesting to see if he and the Carolina Panthers will ever get back to another big game. Yeah. And I mean the big game.
All right, let's jump to the NBA, which, you know, gets going exhibition season now. And I am so, you know, as writers, we always like irony whenever it sort of shows up in front of us in sports, let alone on the page. And when you think back to that, you know, LeBron James in his checkered shirt making the announcement on ESPN that I'm taking my talents to South Beach, and that was Dwayne Wade's town. It was Dwayne Wade's town, and he was going to, you know, join him to kind of save his reputation that, you know, he may be the greatest single talent in the NBA, but he can't win the big ones. And he goes to Miami to do that. They have that four-year run. They win two championships. And now here we are in 2017, and Dwayne Wade, who was the last man standing of that group in Miami and then left there, went, said, oh, I'm coming home to Chicago. I'll finish my career in Chicago. Spends 1 year there, and now he's taking his talents to Cleveland. Well, I mean, they've got Dwayne Wade, Derrick Rose, Isaiah Thomas, and J.R. Smith all possibly playing the same position at some point or another. Bob, I yield the floor to the basketball expert amongst the three of us as to what this is really going to mean for the Cleveland Cavaliers' chances.
I think what he represents is a depth factor. He'll be 36 in January, let's be honest. And there's a reason why he's available. You know, he's no longer a valued commodity. You know, this is just as the wheel turns kind of thing. He's going almost hat in hand into LeBron's world to be an adjunct on this team. That's it. He's going to be in. It's a depth thing, and the bolster their overall. You know, now they got their points in the game. Maybe they can take LeBron off the floor a wee bit more, and in the long run of the season, all that stuff. So that's all. They're building an interesting team, an interesting team in terms of resumes and personalities and life circumstances. You know, Rose is a soap opera in and of himself, yeah. And so that's all. I don't think the word's ironic, but there's an interesting dramatic twist here.
Will he start?
I haven't thought about it yet. I haven't digested it yet. Let's look at the – could he start? He could. Will he finish? I don't know. I mean, I totally analyzed the circumstance. I know the names. You know, we know the names. And, yeah. And by the way, Tristan Thompson, you know, happy fatherhood, you know. So, you know, all kinds of stuff going on with Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't know. He was an okay player last year, but he's not special anymore, you know. But he'll bring some sage wisdom, you know, if they need any more.
Okay, so we've got, coming into this season, Bobby, okay, we have the Celtics, who, as you pointed out, are a mystery guest despite Kyrie and despite Gordon Hayward, because they were returning four players from last year's team. That's one.
Yeah, that's
then
it.
There's
four
the
guys,
Cavaliers.
Four bodies.
Okay, Cavaliers, LeBron, Isaiah Thomas, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, and now Dwayne Wade. So that still looks like your super team from the East, barring whatever the Celtics are going to be and what they're going to become. And then there are three fascinating teams in the West, okay? And what's interesting is I am not including the Spurs into my list of fascinating teams. You've got the Warriors. You've got the Rockets, okay? And now, to me, the Oklahoma City Thunder may be the mystery guest of all the other mystery guests in the league this year.
Oh, I think that without question that and you're right about that, San Antonio is falling backwards. Oh no, Oklahoma City is fascinating, totally fascinating.
Oh.
People, you know what, Mike and Mitch, I don't think most people, I mean, diehard NBA fans do, know how good George is, how good George, how good he was before he got hurt, and it took him a while to get back to where he was, and that he started, but he did start to show the flashes of being the Paul George pre-leg injury last year. Paul George can be a beast, and throw in, now what they've got, they're going to be fascinating, no question, and I think the people there should be very excited.
Paul George suffers from, not playing in the sexy city and not playing on a sexy team. Indianapolis, was perpetually a playoff team and yet basically became fodder for Cleveland. And they were like the Washington Generals, the guys who played the Harlem Globetrotters?
Yeah, right.
But they did go seven life and death games with them a few years ago.
I know,
ago
but, you count, but you, the winner gets remembered. And I'm just echoing Bob's point that Paul George has a lot more talent than image and shadow reputation and sneaker commercials and things like that. I don't know. I imagine Paul George has a sneaker commercial somewhere, but I can't tell you what it was. But I can tell you how many there are for Kevin Durant and for LeBron James. I do worry that all this, with the exception of Boston, maybe. What's the rivalry in the East? I mean, the West is going to get so logjammed come the playoffs that regular season record's going to matter, because you don't want to play this particular team in the first round or whatever, but you got four legitimate teams over there who you could see winning the title. I don't think Boston is going to be ready for that this year, and so on the East, you basically have Cleveland.
No,
it's
going to be the varsity and the JV image. There's no question about it, in West versus East. One team to keep your eye on, they're interesting, is Milwaukee, the Greek Freak and friends. They're sleeping. The team that hopefully can inject themselves into the conversation, at least by the 2018-19 season, that would make life interesting and spark rivalry and all, would be Philadelphia. They do have interesting young components. If their best case scenario ever were to play out, and Simmons can really play, and Fulks is worth it, and he was clearly a number one, and Embiid, who is a really fine young player, can stay healthy and get out there, and maybe Philadelphia can become part of the Eastern conversation. But in terms of making themselves a threat to go all the way or anything like that, down the road, God knows, we're not a long way from that. By the way, they added another component. They got J.J. Redick, and that's going to be important. They're going to be worth watching for their fans at any rate, but we're obviously not talking about them as any kind of serious.
And Mitch, by the way, one of the reasons why I think they will figure it out in Boston and why I think that they will make a run at the Cavs in the East is because I have great belief in Brad Stevens, their coach. And if he could make the run he made, I mean, did anybody really? I love Al Horford. But did anybody look at the Celtics and the Cavs at the start of last season and think that the sides were remotely even? And I wouldn't write off the Celtics as being a big team this year.
And I think you're right about Brad. And I think about this, that do you think that if Danny Ainge, the general manager of the Boston Celtics, did not have full confidence that he had in his employ a coach who had special talents and was capable of doing what he's being asked to do, which is to take a team that won 53 games, rip it up, trade away all but one starter, bring in only have four players back from the roster, and you're going to be able to reassemble this team into a formidable team. I don't think that if he had anything less than complete faith that Stevens could do this, he would have risked everything he did. I realize he's brought in Kyrie Irving, and you had to give up guys to get him. But the fact is that they do have a completely, really a new team, and they're asking him to
start
from scratch.
And Boston's biggest move with regard to their success against Cleveland by the end of the year may be the status of the guy they traded away. If they traded damaged goods, and I've talked about this already on this podcast that he's not, you know, Isaiah Thomas is going to play until January right now. That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
And if he's not the same Isaiah Thomas that, you know, he was at his peak, if this hip thing just doesn't allow him to be, the biggest move that Boston made to take on or perhaps topple the Cleveland Cavaliers is going to be getting rid of him and putting him on Cleveland, where now they're going to end up, if he's not capable, they're going to have point guard by committee with a bunch of older guys. You know, is Derrick Rose going to do it? Is Dwayne Wade going to do it? Is are you going to convert J.R. Smith? So we'll see how that one plays out at the end.
All right, listen, before we get to our parting shots, Bob, you know, this has really quickly become a tradition on the Sports Reporters podcast.
Oh, yeah, where, America awaits this, Mike.
Mitch Album talks about his underwear.
Well, first let me just check, and yes, I do have them on. And gentlemen, I'm here to talk to you about MeUndies. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? Well, that perfect balance is hard to find. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies.com and find the best pair of underwear in the world. And yes, I am wearing them because I said right at the beginning of this podcast, we're not going to talk about anything or have a sponsor that we can't actually legitimately use and know. And I believe, know your sponsor, know your underwear. MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. Made from a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. They are ultimate feel-good undies for when you'd like to feel naked, but not be naked. For the guys, MeUndies Diamond Seam Pouch gives your stuff the support it needs without feeling too tight. And ladies will love the soft, eco-friendly fabric. So touchable. 100% satisfaction guarantee. That's how much they know you will love your undies at MeUndies. And an exclusive offer just for our listeners to get 20% off your first pair and free shipping. So add this all up. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get 100% satisfaction guarantee, meaning if you don't like it, you let them know and back it goes.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
You cannot beat that. So MeUndies.com/reporters. MeUndies.com/reporters. I'm not sure if you get a pair of underwear that actually says MeUndies and underneath it says /reporters, but that would be pretty good.
Yeah.
A limited time offer. So what are you waiting for? Michael, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, no, I'm not waiting. And I know it's a good product, Mitch, but there's one point I just like to clarify for me, okay? When you say you want to look good in your underwear, here's my question. To whom?
To my wife.
That's it.
Let's hope.
Or checking yourself out in the mirror?
Not so much the mirror. Not so much the mirror. Okay. More my wife. Go to MeUndies.com/reporters right now. And now that we've got that cleared up, time for our parting shots. And Bob leads off.
You know, most of the Major League Baseball pennant races were a drag. The Nats clinched on July 4th, I believe. Is that right, Mike? I think something like that. The Dodgers won by a quadrillion games. The Indians lapped the field in August alone. The Astros laughed, ha, 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 at the competition. But, oh, boy, do we have some great storylines for the playoffs to begin next week. You want to talk droughts. Washington last celebrated the title in 1924, 16 presidents ago. Cleveland in 1948. The Dodgers in 88. Remember Lasorda, Gibson, The Astros have never won. You know, the Yankees and Red Sox are involved. That's always fun. And I haven't even mentioned the defending champion Cubs. Oh, and the Twins are the first team to lose 100 one year and make it to the postseason the next. Arizona, hey, they still got the swimming pool. There are any number of juicy matchups. Bring it on, baby!
Back when Tony Romo was a young quarterback for Bill Parcells and the Cowboys and showing some good early results, Parcells took a step back and said, let's not anoint him. It was Parcells' way of saying that the kind of early speed Romo was showing wasn't necessarily going to take him all the way to Canton and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And now it's sort of the same way in Romo's nascent broadcasting career, where he actually was anointed after his first game. He correctly predicted a lot of plays and generally handled himself in a smart, likable way. But by the reaction to his regular season debut, you would have thought the analysis was about the new Stephen Hawking. Romo may turn out to be great. And by the way, he hasn't been saying he was great himself. But maybe we could give him and ourselves half a season before we do anoint him this time as the new John Madden.
63 years ago today, in Game 1 of the World Series, score tied, eighth inning, two men on, a Cleveland Indian named Vic Wirtz hit a ball 400-plus feet to center field at the Polo Grounds. Most other stadiums would have been a three-run homer. Most other outfielders would have been over their head and at least two runs in. But the center fielder for the New York Giants that day was a guy named Willie Mays. And he sprinted backwards and kept running and caught that ball over his shoulder in a basket catch that perhaps is the most famous catch in baseball history. Mays whirled and heaved the ball to second, holding the runners. The inning ended with no runs in, and the Giants went on to win it in 10 and then sweep the series 4-0. Like Kirk Gibson's famous homer for the Dodgers in 1988, that one play in Game 1 may well have turned the entire series. It remains maybe the most watchable highlight in baseball history, one man chasing down one impossible fly ball. It also, take note, took place today, as we're recording this, September 29th, and it was Game 1 of the World Series. This year, September 29th, is still the regular season. We won't get to Game 1 of the series for nearly a month, and Game 7, should it go that far, will be played November 1st. I don't know which I yearn for more, another 1954 Willie Mays catch or the schedule. Thank you for joining us in this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. Every Monday and Friday, you can hear us, and all you got to do is go to your favorite podcast outlet. Apple iTunes is always good podcast, and subscribe. If you do like what you hear here, please give us a review. Apparently those things help. So we will see you on Monday, and a lot to talk about then, obviously, after the big NFL weekend. Guys, thanks very much.
You are welcome.
All right. Until then, with Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom for the Sports Reporter saying have a great weekend.